All right, this hour we'll take your phone calls as we continue to chat with John Hoag about prophecy and things to come right here on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, John Hoag with us. John, before we get into some of your thoughts on the Great American Eclipse, you were talking about the Russian hacking story.
Yes, I'm on record, and actually in the next Trump book I'm going to write that I had to put aside when I had to write Trump Strikes Syria, North Korea, but now, because of time-sensitive other deadlines, I can finally get back to it and hopefully have it out by the end of the year. But in it, I'm going to show a lot of information that indicates that so much of what's been based out there saying the Russians are doing this and Russians are doing that is really based on hearsay and not real solid actionable intelligence or even an understanding of what happened. And I'm going to present in this book a number of things to at least make one consider that it may not actually have been the Russians that sabotaged Hillary Clinton's presidency, but Hillary Clinton herself. And
by her actions, by what?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been doing these popular vote presidential predictions 13 times in a row now.
Absolutely.
Since 1968, and there was only two of the 13 tries that I had to add a caveat to the person, and both of them were about Hillary Clinton in 2008 and 2016. It's all documented in my books and my articles at HoagProphecy.com that anticipating that she has this ability to not listen to good advice, not pick the right
self-destruct
people, and self-destruct, and then looking at her afflicted plans. She's also, you know, it's a funny thing. I remember how I told you before the election that in either case, if it were Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, that I had a hard time seeing either of them surviving politically to continue being president,
mm-hmm.
having to leave office in their first term.
That's
true. And what I often do, as I did with every presidential candidate, I look at their potential futures, because the future is a potential. It's not written in stone. I looked at the future of Al Gore, and I looked at the future of George Bush. What I can say is that everything I wrote about George Bush happened. And this is like written in August of 2000, even before the election. I basically said that this man, by the middle of his first term, would, after some big terrorist event, probably blaming it on Iraq or Iraq doing it, that he would invade and occupy Iraq, take down Saddam Hussein, and create a new Vietnam in the desert.
Well, you were right about that, and we're still there.
Yeah, it's...
My God.
And so I also was working on a book about Hillary Clinton's presidency as I was working on the Trump book. I finished the Trump book first, and then I was working on it, got a lot of it done. And then when she won the popular vote, as I predicted, but didn't win the presidency, I just put it in mothballs in my files. And then a few weeks back, she's kind of risen from the political grave doing this book, What Happened, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
I sense she might come back.
I'll say this, and I'll say it the first time I said it on a radio show, I'll say it on yours. I think she seriously considers running again.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And wouldn't that be strange if she won? Because
oh my God,
I've always been saying that's it's not over yet. But I would say this, that I never expected to ever divulge all that material I wrote on her, because I thought that future was over. But now that it feels like she's coming back, I'm actually working on a serialized release of chapters of a book that I call What Really Happened to Hillary Rodham Clinton. And it looks at not only the things I said about her, anticipating how she could trip up and fall politically, well, not once, but twice in her two attempts, but also I looked at, like I did with George W. Bush, I looked at her afflicted presidency. And I must say to your listeners that as bad as Trump is, there are things in Hillary Clinton's chart that make her potentially an even worse president.
John, let's talk a little bit about the earth changes before we get to these calls. California is getting blasted with fires. We're having hurricane after hurricane. What's going on?
Well, in the Great American Eclipse, Earthquake and Tsunami, the book that I released in early August, just before the Great American Eclipse, I looked at a theory I've been looking at for years about how the shadow, the total shadow to 90% to total in other great eclipses often happens that within days, weeks, 3 months, 18 months, or upwards of 5 years, any seismically sensitive regions that are touched by that level of totality end up having significant tsunami seismic volcanic events. And I just one example was before this great eclipse, several decades ago, we had in 79 in February, the shadow of the moon go over Portland and the Cascades and completely darken Mount St. Helens. And 15 to 16 months later, it blew its top. That made me, that's the first time I started noticing this way back in 1979. So the thing is that also in that book and also in my John Hoag's Worldwide Astrological Predictions book that came out 2 weeks before that one, I detail the astrology windows that look at the possible seismic activities. And even though the eclipse is over and a lot of people are kind of saying, okay, that's it, let's go to the next thing, it's only, in my view, begun. The important time for Americans to watch and be prepared for natural disasters, because I said in those two books that we would see biblical fires and storms and things happening in the summer, late summer of 2017. And unfortunately, they all happened right after this eclipse. Hurricane Harvey comes on the 25th, just 4 days after the eclipse. You get into September, you get, after Harvey hitting the fourth largest metropolitan area in the United States, in southeast Texas, you then are hit by Hurricane Irma, which hits the Virgin Islands, gives $1 billion damage to Puerto Rico, and then buzzsaws through the Florida Keys and into Florida. And that's just a few weeks later. And then you get towards a little later, just one thing, pound, pound, pound after. And that has never happened, ladies and gentlemen. That has never happened in the known records that we have had Category 4 or 5 hurricanes almost coming week by week. But unfortunately, the most accurate forecasters that I ever deal with in the 30-plus years that I've done this work is not Nostradamus or some of these other more subjective prophets, but it's the record of climatologists looking at the trends of the climate that have said 20, 30 years ago that exactly these things, in detail, foreseen by them, are now happening 100%. And that's something you don't even get in subjective prophecy. So this is a wake-up call, a Pearl Harbor of climate change moment that has happened. On top of that, go west to where, you know, you and I, George, last time we were together was at the end of July in up here in Everett. We
that's had right. Had a great time there.
It was a great time, and thanks for having me on it. But, you know, remember how the following day, that's when the smoke came from the mega fires in Canada.
Yeah.
A million acres.
Yeah.
And it was a fog here. You couldn't breathe for 10 to 15 days.
Well, I got out of Dodge just in time, didn't I?
Yeah. You couldn't even see a quarter mile.
My God.
And that, it's not just here. It was all over the state of Washington and Oregon. And that's never happened before. The other thing was that it abated, and then there was the Montana fires that even made it worse in some parts during September. And it's I've been watching the climate changing since 1973. When I was a junior in high school, I became aware of this potential that we were changing the climate. And I'm not alone. Exxon even had documentaries, and I've seen them. They used to show how, well, maybe we are, science is showing that we are impacting with fossil fuels our future. And this is Exxon making these movies. And then they took them off, but they're still in records, and you can pull them out and see them. I've been watching this situation hasten and accelerate, and it's a major theme in prophetic traditions of the world. Many ancient peoples to our modern times have detailed rising of oceans, great droughts, great fires in the center of drying out continents, although the edges of the continents are being inundated by vast and unbelievable biblical storms, which I've talked to you on this show for a couple decades about. And now, it was more theory then, now it's here. It's called Harvey, it's called Irma, it's called Maria. It's called the entire Puerto Rico just flattened. Its whole infrastructure.
Devastating. Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California to get us started. Hi, Tom.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my
call. Sure thing.
And John, you know, I'm reminded with your discourse on the mind plague, I'm reminded of the 1980s bumper sticker, which said, "Always be realistic, expect a miracle." And I really appreciate your realism, yet I think in your heart you expect a miracle. My question, John, is about extraterrestrial disclosure, which would be an absolute game changer. Does prophecy over the next 10 years look at the possibility of extraterrestrial disclosure, or perhaps not even extraterrestrial? We're seeing something in our skies. Maybe it's a human breakaway civilization with a very sophisticated black budget secret space program.
Yes.
But what does prophecy address in the next 10 years for disclosure, whether extraterrestrateral or breakaway
civilization? I'll answer your question now. Thank you for this question. And first thing to say is that I do not expect a miracle at all. It's not about expecting. It's about awakening to the miracle that I already am and you already are. And that's the light that's always been there. And that's, of course, a very strong theme in my writing, is not just to tell you, scare the dickens out of you about watching the future, but to show you that there are also prophecies about the coming of a new humanity that embraces religiousness beyond religion, that has no borders, that lives as one. And there are many hopeful prophecies about that. Now, to your question, in the next 10 years, because we don't have a lot of time, I'm actually writing a whole book on the future of space travel and UFO contact as seen by the prophets of old to the present day. It's been a long task because it's difficult to corroborate. There's so many things out on the internet that sound really great, but really can't corroborate if it's a true prophecy or not. So the thing is, I just say it again, the essence of my message is this. UFO people are not going to impose themselves upon us in a public mass way. They are waiting for us to discover them. Because when we are ready to see they're there, then there'll be a connection. It's not incumbent upon them to announce themselves like the day the earth stood still and land like Klaatu in front of the White House or the Capitol building. It's for us to rise up to the understanding that they are there. And the way we'll do it, I have great hope in the greater technological advances in planetary telescopic study. We are actually going to someday see artificial light and indications with more sensitive telescopes of civilizations on these worlds that we're discovering almost daily. We'll begin to do that. And that will be the catalyst for this change, this awareness of UFO people.
Next up, we have Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hey, Michael.
Before I go into talking about Trump, I just want to make you aware, George, that John has a brother who in my opinion, is one of the most impressive evangelical ministers that has ever appeared on American media. Extremely mature. I'm sure John is very proud of him. I hope John could arrange to have him be a guest on your show, George.
Okay, yeah, I'll talk to him about that.
Okay. Yeah, so the yes, my brother is he's definitely an authentic Christian rebel, and he gets kicked out of a lot of churches, I hear, because, like a dear friend of mine who is a rabbi, and sometimes I think on your show, and certainly on Ancient Aliens, Rabbi Ariel Zadot.
Oh, yeah.
A dear friend of mine. I recall he told me one time that he was being debated by Hal Lindsey about Scripture, and Hal Lindsey soon found out that not only does Rabbi Ariel speak fluent Aramaic and Hebrew and basically knows his New Testament better than most Christians do. My brother is also a great scholar in the new translations of the Bible and better translations of the Greek. And so, you know, who knows? someday maybe you'll have him on. Who knows?
All right. And go ahead, Michael.
If I could just give you a quick timeline on Trump. This time, the line will explain why James Comey did the things that he did, which seemed to be schizophrenic. First of all, before going into this timeline, understand this. The pollsters, all of them, were saying Hillary would win. Hillary would win. Right up until the night of the election itself. So they believed that they were going to have to deal with Hillary, but they were frightened by that. I mean, the intelligence community, and it's clear, as soon as he was elected, they were frightened of both of them. And we're hearing every day from Sean Hannity the reasons why they were frightened of Hillary, but we're not hearing from Sean Hannity the reasons why they were frightened of Trump. Here's the timeline. The year 2000, he runs as the nominee for the Reform Party. Then he meets Melania, and this was an arranged meeting. She was a total stranger. She was actually paraded before him.
Yeah, okay. There's a lot of people who want to ask questions, so can you come to the...
Brandon, unfortunately, we'll get that when we come right back with you, Michael. We're going to have to go to the break in just a few moments. John, your books are available where, by the way? Most of them are e-books, aren't they?
Well, most of them are e-books, but most of them will soon be also in printed form. And then after they've been in Amazon, I also take them to Nook and Kobo and other outlets for e-books. If you just go to hogueprophecy.com, everybody, HOGUEPROPHECY, you'll see my books, my articles, and especially a special little article I wrote just for all of you that looks at the overview of a very important book that I released just this yesterday called Beyond the Alt-Right, Alt-Left.
It's brand new. Okay, John, we're going to come back with more and wrap things up with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast with John Hogue, our final segment. And Michael in Virginia Beach want to give you that chance to get your question in. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you so much. Well, the reason I mentioned John's brother, Rich, is because he's the man who can come on here and explain to you why the Russians and only a few, a handful of top-level evangelicals knew that Trump would win. And that's because of the voting pattern of the evangelicals, which our major polling agencies have never been able to figure out.
Well, the other thing that Hillary did wrong is she missed up on a couple key electoral college states. Had she covered Pennsylvania, Michigan, and some of those, she might have had a chance, John.
Well, in fact, the I had also come out and said in the President Trump book, the first one I did before the election, that they were, the left-leaning pollsters were doing two things. They were ignoring the evangelical vote, which I said was the big sleeper, the waking up the white vote, white lower class labor and other people. I said, I also wrote that a year before the election. The other thing is that they were basically relying on a system that no pollster will tell you this, of the mainstream pollsters. There's a huge data hole now in the polls, because it, by law, they can't do calls to anybody but somebody like me, one of the last people in the world with a landline. And so they only have the edges of the data pool to make their predictions, and that is one of the reasons why they've been on top of the bias. Even Nate Silver didn't do well at all. How could he do so poorly when he did so well in the last two presidential cycles? Well, that's because everybody's on cell phones now, and they don't want to say it, but they don't have the data.
All right, back to the calls we go. Let's go out to Joe in Oklahoma City. Hey, Joe, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I disagree with some of the stuff he's saying. I think Trump is doing a wonderful job. I mean, you got ISIS on the run. They're being defeated. North Korea, I mean, they torture their own people. Look at the guy that was tortured to death.
That poor guy.
I happen to be a white, educated voter, and I have a lot of friends that are educated that voted for Trump.
Well, first off,
he's going to be one of the best presidents we've ever had.
First off, thanks for calling. And secondly, I hope you won't judge the full body of my work because of a radio show where we have so much to say, and we could go on for hours and hours. I'm on record as being one of the most positive writers about Trump to the ire of the left. And, you know, that I also, even though I don't pull my punches, I don't deny the positives. And in my book on Trump and how he won his presidency, in the North Korean book, and in this big climatic third book that I'm going to produce, you'll find that I hear you. I hear you, and I hear the people on the other side. It's also why I just released a book called Beyond the Alt-Right and the Alt-Left, the extreme identity politics that has the potential of taking all of us Americans into another civil war by the 2020s, a different, very different from the one that happened before. And so in that book, I don't pull my punches on the extreme ideas of either side, but I listen to both sides because I am neither red or white or red or blue. I'm neither conservative or liberal. I'm not left and right wing. I'm a free wing. Free wing is how I'm able to do what I do. So I say a lot of positive things about Trump in my book. In fact, when I write these books of astrological readings, I write them, even if they're hard readings, I write them as if I wanted Trump to read this so he can do better.
Yeah, his biggest problem, John, he's not a great speaker.
And it's true, and one of his greatest virtues is he's authentic. He's very authentic, and he has an innocent heart. And I do tell stories in my books that don't get in the press of how compassionate he can be, how humble he can be.
I don't think he's a mean person.
No, he isn't. But he is an open channel, and when I criticize him, I actually want to help him. I think every American should help their leader, whoever he is or she is, be better.
Don't you think some of the mainstream media, though, is harping too much on things that he says and does?
Absolutely, because they have completely surrendered their journalistic integrity to ratings. And that's exactly what Edward R. Murrow was so afraid would happen.
Yeah, he was right.
He saw it coming. It broke his heart because he saw the end of journalism when journalists had to be competitors and gain ratings and have advertisers dictate how they should do free press. That's the end of journalism, and we're in that now.
Let's go to Cornelius in Alexandria, Louisiana. Wait till you get a hold of this one, John. Go ahead, Corny.
All right there, George and Tommy and John Hogue. I'm your God, guns, and gold man, your Bible, bullets, and beans man there, Mr. John Hogue.
All right.
I'm really enjoying you tonight. My question for you, Mr. Hogue, you're a great prophecy man. I'm a biblical prophecy man. There's some forces that are trying to bring the country apart, and I'm a big Trump supporter myself. I'm a black evangelical, and I believe you think it's going to be a civil war. I think we're going to have a race war, and the Nation of Islam guy, Louis Farrakhan, said by 2019 or 2020 that's going to happen. So I just want to hear what you think about it, and God bless you there, John Hogue. And
well, God bless you, too. And, actually, Louis Farrakhan, I've been watching and studying for many years. He sees things often as it's coming. I thought his Million Man March speech was one of the best speeches I'd heard in the last 20 years of American speech. And a lot of lessons for all of us to look at. And I agree with him in my book, Alt-Left, Alt-Right, A Community of Americans, is really seeing this potential upheaval or unraveling, this balkanization of the United States, as really driven by racial tensions that we still have not reconciled and forgiven and understood in this country. So it's a major theme in the book, and I hope everybody will read it, because it's trying to wash away the tinted glasses called red and blue and bring us all together again. And it talks about how there's a future beyond political parties, because political parties live by polarity. They live by keeping us separate. But you all know, if you're in your community and you're involved with your community, you live and let live with a lot of people you don't agree with, different beliefs, different religions. But there's always this unwritten rule, this unwritten heart connection with everybody in any community you're in, where you got to work. You've got to find common ground, and then you accentuate the common ground that we share. And that's the way out of this mess, and this book talks about it.
John, you've looked at some of the work of that prophet Matthias Stormberger. Have you not?
Yes.
He's kind of, he's dead now. He was in the 1700s, but pretty uncanny, wasn't he?
He was uncanny. One of the things that makes him so uncanny, like the Hopi prophecies and other traditions that are not so, that are heart, pure heart. I mean, he was a simple cowherder, a Bavarian cowherder who started making his verbal predictions. He couldn't read, so they were set down just before he died around 1820, but he made most of them in the late 18th century. And so it has the beauty of the purity of innocence, just like a lot of native prophecies don't have all, they don't need to hide themselves like Nostradamus did, and a lot of nebulous mumbo jumbo, which he had to do so he wouldn't be burned at the stake. They lived in a society that respected their elders, respected their seers, and so they could just speak simply with the innocence of a child. And Stormberger did the same, and he was, I introduce him to the mainstream of readers in my book, A New Cold War, the prophecies of Nostradamus, Stormberger, and Edgar Cayce.
Yeah, I mean, some of his prophecies, he predicted World War I and II, predicted a third world war, all kinds of things. I mean, where would you put him on the chart next to, like, Nostradamus?
Well, I'd put him in the top 10. He's definitely up there because he is documented. There could be greater prophets we'll never know about because no one set their statements down for the record and date tagged them. One thing I learned from studying Edgar Cayce is that all of his 14,000 plus readings, mostly for healing and a handful of them about readings for the future, were all filed and documented and date tagged. And that's why, learning from him, I have made sure that everything I predict has been filed and published and date tagged, so that you can see. You know, there was a book written by Hewlin Cayce, his son, that was about all the prophecies that he got wrong and how Edgar Cayce dealt with it. It's one of the rarest books of Cayce studies that's out there, but it's a wonderful book. You see the humility of Edgar Cayce trying to figure out, wow, what did I do? He tried to work out how he got in the way of the message. He was such a humble and beautiful man. And I strive to do the same thing in my work.
Yes, you do. Steve in Phoenix, Arizona. Go ahead, Steven. Thank you.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hi, John.
Hi.
There's been talk about how the mountains and the animals know what's coming, and it's there's an uneasy feeling around the planet, and I couldn't agree more. I think what's at stake is so big. I don't believe, and I think we have to accept the possibility that no president is in charge of it. And it's possible that, there's this word that's been thrown around. It's a phrase, actually. It's called the military-industrial complex. And I think probably, looking back, it makes sense that when George Sr. became president, that's probably when that was solidified. And we've been through Bush, Clinton, Bush, and almost another Clinton since then. I can't imagine that it got weaker. I only think that it got stronger. I think that at least in the second half of Obama's presidency, we probably have been controlled by some sort of a military dictatorship. Another word for that would be a junta.
Well, yes, I can tell you the date it happened. It happened in the end of January 2010 when the Supreme Court decided on Citizens United in favor that corporations were people and money was free speech. That was the last step. And yes, I would concur with you. It really began to crystallize with George Bush Sr. And then it continued to deepen. And it's a very strong theme in all my books about the deep state and the perpetual war business. It's in the new Cold War book. I go through the whole history of how it evolved. And yes, this republic was lost. I would say we lost our republic in January of 2010. And it's one of the main reasons why we may be into some upheaval coming soon. And yes, you're right. The presidents, this is one of the shocks I think President Trump discovered early on, is that presidents do not have the power. And in the book I'm finishing on him, I show how he's getting in deep trouble with the deep state. And if he does leave office, it's because he has questioned the power, which I highly support him for doing that. Tomorrow or the next day, I think, Thursday, we're going to see the Kennedy papers released.
Yes, isn't that remarkable?
Released by the president that has so many karmic echoes to John F. Kennedy, because only Trump after Kennedy has questioned the CIA's hegemony over the United States.
We've got Gary in Santa Maria, California. Squeeze you in here, Gary. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. John, you and I use the exact same software for doing the astrology, and I got a couple of the pricey little report generators from Grant Louis and Stephen Forrest. Trump is using what I call tactical timelining based on astrology with his tweets. If you take any of his most sensational tweets, especially his very first tweet, and nice thing about Twitter is they put an exact timestamp when it went on. Those timestamps correlate perfectly to the minute of when the rising sign changes, and then you use the French database to go back in history and see what happened on that sun, moon, and rising sign harmonic or you might want to think about it as an octave.
Is he doing it on purpose, Gary, or is he lucking out?
No, I think he has a thorough understanding of astrology himself, or he has somebody really close to him that does. Now, his uncle, John Trump, John G. Trump, if you go to Wikipedia, he's the man that vetted all of the Tesla papers on time viewing, or some people call Trump a time traveler. I think it's more of a time viewer, far beyond remote viewing, using the Tesla technology.
Well, that's interesting, Ted. How well do you think he knows astrology, John?
I think he has an astrologer or two. I get the feeling that he does.
Available to him?
Yeah, and I think he, with Trump's unique mind, with that Uranus Mr. Surprise, he's like, he's a very unusual person.
He is. He is.
He kind of is very much at peace in chaos. He is spontaneous, like, and I mean this not in disrespect. I think any human being that can be in touch with their innocence, whatever their age is a spiritual attribute. He's challenging power. I want to say some positive things about him because certainly as much as I hate him, I also love him and want him to succeed, as I think any American would want their president to succeed. He has some blind spots, and you know, and he is struggling with the situation, and I see him doing a lot of things that he did in The Art of the Deal, where he comes at a problem, that doesn't work, he comes another way, and he keeps coming, He's relentless that way. And I mean it, it happened, I wrote about it. I saw him when he started making deals with Schumer and Pelosi and left the...
Well, we got to get you back on, John, for some prophecy updates, to be sure. John Hogue, our special guest, website... linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, the Catholic perspective of the miracle at Fatima.